So last time we started talking about control, where we try to exert control, and the freedom which comes when we are willing to relinquish control. We recognize that in fact we never have control over a situation. We talked about how the illusion of control imprisons us. And the way we can escape that prison by letting go of control, which isn't letting go of effort and isn't letting go of action, but is letting go of the belief that we can actually be in total control of the situation, and the tension and the force which comes from that belief. We talked about how this letting go of control is in part a sense of curiosity, a way in which we are both an actor in and an observer of our own life. And there's a kind of playful curiosity we can have about, this is interesting. I wonder how that one's going to work out. You know, like, okay, I'm going to do my best, and then we'll kind of see. We'll see what happens. It's a very humbling, in the best sense of the word, transformation in our attitude towards life. It's a kind of surrender and deep humility which recognizes that I'm not God in that sense. I can't control everything. I can't do everything, right? I can't be in charge of everything. I'm not the general manager of the universe. I can just do what I can do. And a beautiful piece of that is really asking for help. Some of us, it's very hard to ask for help. Classic example is of men being difficult to ask for directions, right? But can we just ask for help? Even the simplest step of just asking God, asking Hashem for help. Just saying, okay, wow, I don't know what to do here. Please help me. That simple request for help. I feel like there's so many moments in my life, I think moments in all of our lives, which teach us in deep and often painful ways about our lack of control. So I wasn't in class last week, and I wasn't in class because while driving home on Monday night from Jerusalem to Hanatom with some friends, our car on Kfish Shesh, going like 120 kilometers an hour, burst a tire, flipped over, and went skidding across the highway. Right? It's a pretty crazy experience. A lot of fear, definitely no control. I wasn't driving in any case, so there's no control. But, right, the car flipped, there are like sparks flying as we slide across the highway. The car finally stopped. I'm like suspended in midair by my seatbelt. You know, we're all kind of just in shock, like, oh my God, what just happened? Looking at each other, we're all fine, amazingly, like totally physically fine. These nice people stop and I manage to open the back. We're in a Jeep, we crawl out the back of the Jeep. And of course in this situation, which is a very quick situation, but fear is arising, right? There's like, the car starts to wobble, fear. The car flips over, fear, right? We're sliding along, fear. The car stops and it's like, is the car going to explode? You know, like, who knows what's going to happen? There were just sparks. None of us knew what was going to happen. You know, fear again. It's like, okay, great, fear. Can't do anything about it. What am I going to do in this situation? What's the wisest place to be in this situation? And not just in that situation, but also what happens when I come out of the situation? So we exit the car, and two things have happened. One has happened is that I've lost my glasses. And as I have new glasses, right? So my glasses have fallen off my face. So not only am I on the side of the road, have none of my stuff, which is still in the car, don't know what's happened. Also, including my glasses, my bike, which was tied to the back of the car, has been smashed. So all of these have been smashed, right? And I can't see anything, right? So I'm sitting on the side of the road. I can't see anything. Like, I don't really know what's happening. Finally, the police come, you know, but like, it's very hard for me to communicate. I don't know who's talking to me. I can't see anything. And some of other us are like doing some kind of help, but I'm like not helping at all because I can't see anything, right? Like, I can't get things out of the car, I can't search for my glasses, which were never found. Who knows what happened? It's a very disorienting experience, right? And I noticed, even at that moment, the impetus to kind of try and fight that experience and try to assert some kind of, do you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to be in charge of the situation. And then my ability to say, you know what? There are three other people in the car. I can't see anything. I can't really do anything. I don't even really know where I'm walking. So I'm just going to relinquish control here. You know, they're going to take care of it. If the police need to ask me questions, they did sometimes, like, they'll come and find me. You know, like they called from the police truck. They were like, you know, the people who are in the car, please come over. I was like, okay, I'm going to just stay here. They can come talk to me if they need to talk to me, right? So just, how do you just, a little bit of that relinquishing control. And it's not only that moment of relinquishing control, there's another element, which is, I've been in one other serious car accident many, many years ago, and funnily enough, also in this car accident, the car, we were hit by a driver on drugs, this is in New York City, going through a red light, just smashed into us, spun the car around, the car tipped over, hit the, luckily, the cement side things that protect the pedestrians. We bounced back. That's a sort of crazy situation. And this is when I was in college, so many, many years ago. And also then I was quite, actually sort of in control, right? And I was okay, I didn't freak out on the situation. But also, I never was willing to actually acknowledge and experience the fear that of course I experienced in that situation, right? It's impossible to go through a situation like that and not experience fear. You see, like, you may be about to die, you don't know what's gonna happen. Fear is a natural response and a logical and healthy response. So another part of the not exerting control was allowing myself to feel the fear, right? Especially after in the first 10 minutes it was more like shock, like, oh my God, we're all okay and in one piece. Then it was like, wow, that was scary, right? Okay, can I let myself, people have different tendencies. My tendency is to say, no, clamp down, not experience that. Can I allow myself to really experience, wow, that was terrifying. That was terrifying. Like, we didn't know what was happening. I was suspended in midair, totally disoriented. Can I really feel, allow myself to feel that terror and then not have the terror cling to me, right? By allowing myself to genuinely feel it, I don't have to then carry it with me for the next weeks, months, life, whatever, right? It can be there, it can be totally okay, and slowly, it doesn't have to be at that moment, it can move through me and move past me, right? But if we fight it in those situations, if we fight it, because we're desperately trying to exert control, then we suffer, right? Then we suffer. It's like if you've ever been swimming in an ocean, it's like a riptide, right? If you get caught in a riptide and you try and fight the riptide, you try and swim in your experience, it's almost impossible because you're just not strong enough. They're incredibly powerful. What you have to do is not do nothing. It doesn't mean you just let the riptide take you out to sea so you drown, right? That's not the wise response. What you need to do when you're caught in a riptide is actually swim parallel to the shore because they're only a certain width. So you just swing parallel to the shore until, right, without having to do too much effort, you can escape the riptide and then more easily come into shore, right? So you don't give up and you also don't fight against the riptide because you're going to lose, right? It's stronger than you are. But there's wise action you can take. Wise action, which is acknowledging it's not about control. It's like, well, how can I just act skillfully in this situation to make the space for myself to return as I need to return? The Pizetzner says that the way we actually need to think about our action, it's a beautiful line. He says, a person machshir et atzmo, prepares himself, kind of koshers himself, and then God acts through you. And that's the way we need to think about each of our actions. Not as if we are really, there's almost no doing. It's almost like non-action. Not that we're not, of course, acting, there's effort making, but the effort is actually in the preparing ourselves and opening ourselves to what's the right action in the situation, which is this very open, non-controlling state, and then just allowing the divine, allowing whatever's right and true in that situation to just speak through us, to just allow us to act naturally in that moment. But we don't do nothing. That preparation, that openness, that willingness to sort of open to right action is actually absolutely essential. And if we don't do it this way, if we do it instead with a lot of force, then there's a lot of tension. There's a lot of struggle. There's bitterness when it doesn't work out. There's anger when it doesn't work out. There's stress. But if instead we can prepare ourselves, and he says also, it's interesting, he says we prepare ourselves and we prepare the world, and then we allow God to act through ourselves in the world. So we prepare ourselves and we prepare the world. It's really a very important transformation. I think also, you know, for those of us who are involved in all kinds of tikkun in the world, social justice work, other kind of work, therapeutic work, etc. When we do that work from the perspective of control, it's very painful work, right? Because there's a lot of frustration, there's a lot of bitterness, there's a lot of failure. That's just the nature of the work, right? We're working about things that are messed up and wrong, and we're trying to fix it and do something good about it. And we're constantly demanding that reality be a certain way and constantly hurting in pain when reality doesn't respond to our demands. Because that's what happens. Reality doesn't always respond to our demands. But if instead we can have the attitude of, I'm opening and preparing myself for the most loving action I can do and letting go of controlling the result of the action. It doesn't mean we don't act as wisely as possible. We do. But we recognize that we can't control the ultimate result of that action. And so it's no longer a demand. It's more like a very important request, right? We recognize that request may not be fulfilled, and that's going to be okay. We can be with the request not being fulfilled without failing to put forward the request, right? It's not passivity, but it's not the tightness of demanding the world to be a certain way. And really, it's the meaning. You know, I think one of the, I just remember this moment very clearly, I've talked about it before, of realizing, you know, when we look at Shemot, and we look at the movement of Pesach, right, and we go through the Haggadah, and we talk about it as the holiday of liberation and freedom, which it is. It is the Zman Cheruteinu, the time of liberation. But what is the liberation we experience? We go from being an Eved Mitzrayim to being an Eved Hashem, right? We don't go to being a cosmopolitan, non-attached individual, right, out there in the world. We become, what freedom is actually here, is this being Eved Hashem, which is actually this acknowledgement of a lack of control. That really I'm kind of a servant, and I'm hoping, I'm opening myself to allow the divine to move through me, and allow me to be a servant of that divine urge in the world, of that divine force in the world. And that's actually the exact same thing of acting from a place of selflessness. It's the exact same thing. It's the opening up, it's the letting go of the ego. The ego is all about that demand and control, that demand for safety, the demand for things to be a certain way. And the gentleness of the true let go of that is the space for, in the Hasidic discourse, what they would say is the ayin, the nothingness, which is the divine in us, to act instead of the ani. The I, right? We transform the ani, aleph nun yud, into the ayin, aleph yud nun, right? The same letters, just a subtle transformation, a subtle letting go, and all of a sudden, there's all kinds of openness and space instead of the tightness of the ego. But when we don't do that, when we act from that sense of control, then what we experience is disappointment and guilt. And I think that's one very important, let me say maybe clearly, more clearly, is really bitterness. Bitterness and guilt, or resentment and guilt. The Besh talks about how ashma, guilt, is actually a tool of the Yetzirah. It's actually, he says, it's no good. It's not a useful emotion for us to have. It's a tool of the Yetzirah to make us feel like the world and ourselves are untransformable. Right? I'm terrible. I've failed. I'm going to beat myself up about it now. It's a kind of self-violence, which is also a kind of self-protection because now I don't have to act in the world. Which doesn't mean, and this is the key difference, it's the difference between control and sort of wise open action. With wise open action, we still have regret and we have sadness, right? We have regret and sadness, but we don't have guilt and bitterness, right? We don't have resentment. It's quite quite an important difference. There's still the sadness of loss, like, oh, I wish the world could be this way. It'd be so much better if there was less pain in the world. And it's sad. I feel that movement of compassion and that movement of sorrow that the world is not this way, right? Totally healthy. And I did this thing, and that was wrong. That was painful. I hurt somebody, and I feel deep regret about it. And now I'm going to do whatever I can to transform and fix that and make up for it in whatever way I can do that, right? Very clear, very healthy. But that comes from that place of open, gentle action, which recognizes I don't have control, where I'm not in control and it's not all about me. But when it's all about me and I think I have control, all of a sudden it becomes this guilt, because it's all about me, right? I controlled it, I messed up, it's just me, I'm now a terrible person, it's about myself, it's about a sense of identity as the way I failed, right? It's about this bitterness at the world. How can the world be this way when it must, has to be some other way? And the bitterness and guilt, at least in my experience, actually prevents us from acting in the most skillful and wise ways to bring the transformation we want to bring. Right? It actually ends up, I say in my own experience and also working with other people and sort of work to transform the world, we bring a kind of violence to the very work of healing we're trying to do in the world. Right? So there may be some healing as well, but there's always some kind of violence and aggression which is joined in with that healing and which is causing at the same time breaking and destruction in the world in that very moment. And this movement of kind of control, letting go of control, sort of wise action, is also very much what we practice in the formal practice itself, in our sitting. When we experience something happening inside, whatever it is, maybe just kind of a movement of energy, a physical sensation, a thought, an emotion, our natural response, especially let's say the first time we're meditating, is to try to control it. Right? It's like, I'm so bad at this, why are these thoughts happening? Why is this stupid physical sensation annoying me? I'm supposed to be concentrated and meditating, right? Whatever it is, like we're trying to control it. We're trying to force it to either not be there or to be there in a certain way, or my mind is supposed to be behaving in a certain way, right? That's our tendency, totally natural tendency. But instead, we learn slowly with the practice to relinquish control and to change not what's happening, but our relationship to what's happening. Right? We recognize it's like, oh, well, the mind's thinking. That's what the mind does. I'm actually not going to stop the mind from thinking, ever, right? That's the nature of the mind. The mind thinks. But I don't need to fall into the mind's thoughts. I don't need to get caught up in it. I don't need to start obsessing in relationship to it. There's a way that I can actually observe it, have a much gentler relationship, which allows then a transformation to take place. My teachers, Amita, said, at first, you know, our tendency is to go to war with the mind, right? So we like go to war and we want to like control it and make it do what we want it to do. And sometimes you can actually do that for short moments. Like you can do it. You can kind of do concentration practice. You can kind of like aggressively force your mind to stop that and be doing one thing. You can do it. But you can't win that war. You can win a battle here or there, but you can't win the war. And you'll be having that war for the rest of your life. Right? You'll be involved in that war for the rest of your life. Or instead, we can just decide, oh, I can stop trying to control and learn how to live with my out-of-control mind. Right? Just like saying, it's like, oh, sometimes the greatest thing to practice, your mind is... This today, I'm totally unfocused. My mind is going everywhere. I want to be like, oh, this is such a waste of time. No, it's like, oh, interesting. This is what crazy, totally distracted mind is like. That's interesting. That's quite valuable, actually. Let's like see. Oh, well, this is mine when it's going totally all over the place and it won't settle at all. Will not settle today. Oh, great. This is crazy mind. That's really valuable. Now I'm seeing crazy mind. And at those moments, the moments when we let go of control, not only is there the peacefulness of the relinquishing of tension, there can also be actually quite a profound gratitude, a gratitude of knowledge, a really insight into, this is part of the nature of who I am. This is what I'm seeing, and I wouldn't be able to see this in any other way than my willingness right now to relinquish control, to give up control. I don't know if you've seen the movie The Matrix, but I really like it. And there's a great scene where Neo is finally brought before the architect. I don't remember the scene, right? But like he's gone through the whole Matrix, he's finally brought before the architect, and he sees finally what the whole Matrix is, and they're having all this discussion, and he finally figures out that the whole Matrix, which we sort of figure out in the movie, is an entirely a mechanism for control, right? And the architect talks about how, though, the Matrix, what the Matrix does is, it's actually not perfect, right? It's got to have all these little problems in it, because otherwise the human beings just wouldn't accept it. Everything just, like, worked out perfectly and well. It's got all these little problems. In order to control these human beings so these, you know, bizarre alien creatures can feed off the energy of their body, right? That's the premise of the movie, if you haven't seen it. But it's actually deeply insightful about, what is the Matrix? The Matrix in the movie, right, is this illusion, this illusion of the mind created by these machines in order to make human beings live in a fantasy world. But the reality is that that's what we do. We live in a matrix of our own creation every day, right? The illusion that our minds create, which is all the judgments we make, all the reactions, all the projections we have onto ourselves, other people, the world, which is all a mechanism of control. It's all ultimately, sometimes in very twisted ways, a way of trying to make ourselves feel in control and safe and secure in the world. Right? All these projections we have. The way of making ourselves trying to say, like, I can understand the world, I can box it in, I have control of it. This sense of openness, vulnerability, lack of sureness, sense of change, impermanence, which is the actual nature of our experience, is too terrifying, and so we try to assert control. But of course, that control is never fulfilling, right? Just like all the people who wake up in the Matrix. There's something, even if life is pretty good, there's something not quite right, not quite satisfying, right, about that sense of control, that our efforts to exert control. And there's something terrifying about, remember the first movie, right, but they take the red pill. So you take the red pill, that's the final stage. It's like you take the red pill, you wake up. You see that the Matrix is an illusion and you can't go back, right? Unfortunately, in our case, we can go back. And actually what we do is we go back and forth all the time. Like we take the red pill for a moment, we wake up, we see something, we go back, we see something else, we go back, and that's good. That's the actual human process, right? But we recognize every time we take that red pill and we wake up a little bit, we have a little bit of insight into the fact that actually these mechanisms of control, although they feel secure in some ways, are not really serving us. They're not really serving us. They're not really going to make us happy. They're not going to make us whole. They're not going to make us secure. They're not going to bring us love. Right? They're not actually going to serve our deep purposes in life. Well, on the other hand, the willingness to let go of control, despite the fear involved, genuine fear that involves, is actually going to bring us genuine security, which is the willingness to be with the changing and constantly open and formless nature of our lives in the universe. Okay, so we're going to pause there for tonight. There's a lot more to say about it. Next time, we're going to start to talk a little bit about this element of control and lack of control in the life of mitzvot, how we work with it in terms of our Jewish practice, and also how we work with it in terms of relationships and some other elements as well. So as normal, that's the time open now for questions, thoughts, etc. Can I just ask? It's a little freezing in here, isn't it? Yeah. You can adjust that. Exactly. But we can still take wise action, which is we can actually affect the temperature in the room. Okay.
Image you gave of the rip time was very interesting. And I think that the reason why you're saying a very simple message, but we have to hear it over and over and over again because we're not wired that way. So I'm asking yourself why. And I think partly because of those moments you described before where we do have a victory for a moment. If, in the meditation, if my mind is going that way and I can pull it back, then I say, oh, look, I did it. And it's in a Pavlovian kind of way, I think, well, this must be the way, right? So we're very conditioned to, because a lot of the things we've done in our lives have come due to our action, and if we hadn't done the action, it looks like they wouldn't have happened. But then I'm thinking about this riptide idea and saying to myself, well, you know, if I was to let go, that would be the sweeping out to sea. So it's not letting go, it's your message is a double one. It's let go and then move into wise action. Let go and then move into wise action. And we have to remember that otherwise all we hear is let go. Then we try letting go, we see that nothing happens. You know, if you tried letting go of all the areas of your life, nothing would, not very much, some things, not, you know, a lot of stuff would fall by the way. So.
And that's right, I just want to continue with that a little bit, which is the letting go is actually fundamentally an internal letting go. And it's a letting go, I'm very specific, and that's why I keep talking about that, of control. Right? What we let go of is the sense of control. And from that letting go of control, actually, wise action naturally emerges. And let me just say one other words about it, which is, you asked this good question, which is, why are we wired the other way? So I'll talk a little bit about it from my experience, which I think is somewhat of a shared experience. And I just think an interesting fact of our transition, which is, as children, I think in some way we often learn to be wired the other way. And we learn that because we experience fear and challenge in some way. And the ways we try to exert control help us to soothe that fear. And that's important and good. And most of us, and in some ways all of us, because of the nature of what it means to be a child and to have certain resources available, not other resources available, are not able yet in those moments to learn or have not been taught other ways of encountering and being with situations of fear and challenge. So we adapt and learn the adaptive techniques that we have, which do work for us. The reason we use them is that they are useful in some ways, right? They do help us get things done. They do help us succeed, right? So let's say I used to have a lot of tension and obsessiveness in my kind of work and success-driven life, right? And yeah, that worked for me. I mean, right? I did well. Like, I got good grades. I got the things I wanted to get. Of course it worked in one way. It was also very painful, which for a lot of my experience, I was just trying to shut out. And eventually when that pain was like, hello, right? Can't shut me out anymore. Then it was a very distressing experience, right? So I could really experience that pain. And so what we learn is how not to, as you're saying, we don't let go of action. It's not about letting go of action or activity or effort in our lives. We don't let go of effort. Effort is really important, also in our formal practice. Letting go doesn't mean chilling out, you know, and just letting our mind do whatever it wants. There's still effort involved. Effort, for instance, is, oh, I'm going to let go of control and make an effort to have a wise relationship to what's happening in my mind right now. The wise relationship is trying to observe, for instance, the mind. And there's effort involved there, right? It's not just totally open. And also in an action, if we're doing something, it's letting go of the demand for it to be a certain way. And when we let go of that, there's actually a kind of more natural action that can arise. It sort of arises spontaneously from our recognition of the need of that situation. It's less at least in my experience, one of the beautiful things about it is that often when we're coming from the place of control, it feels like there's a lot of decisions to be made in a certain way. And when we're willing to relinquish control, there's a kind of natural wisdom that, not always 100% of the time, you know, but there's a natural wisdom which you can just feel at that moment what the response is that's called for, and it naturally comes forth from you.
It's confusing, because what I was going to say about the riptide was that when you see the riptide, you remember what James said, and you say, right, I have to swim parallel to the shore. In other words, you take an action to, you don't get swept out to sea, and you don't just, you do the thing that will save you. And I think we're wired as children. You mentioned as children, what our parents are busy teaching us all the time is that actions have consequences, and if you want to go and get a certain consequence, you do that action, keep your hand away from the fire, work hard in school, you know, those are all the things. And all the whole time in our lives, like just now, it was noisy outside, so the thing to do is to get up and close the door, right?
Yeah.
Do I need to go through some entire process before I get up and close the door? Well, I don't know, maybe I can get up and close the door from a much more flowy place, or from a much tighter place of anger, and why are these people, you know? But what I noticed on the meditation retreat was that you guys were really trying to challenge us to hold the place that wants to get up and close the door and wait with that, and not even do the action, and that helped us catch ourselves in that early moment before we even do it. To what? Can you finish the sentence?
Yeah.
What is the use?
Good.
Of
Because normally we react automatically, right? The door's open, our mind is immediately, just as you said, annoying noise, annoying people, bad annoying people, must go close the door, right? Or whatever the chain of reactions of your mind is. We want to move to the place. The place we want to get to is noise. That's okay, but it'd probably be easier for us if the door was closed. I'm going to close the door, right? As you want to get to. Like, it's wise to close the door. Nothing wrong with closing the door. But just as you said, the gap between those places is very wide. And so the way we practice with it, and that's why part of what we do formal practice, because it's an opportunity to actually work with that moment, is annoying door. Let's not do anything. Let's just sit with, I'm totally annoyed. Good. Open to that sense of annoyance. Open to that sense of annoyance. Explore it. See what's happening. See how that annoyance is wrapped with all kinds of other experiences that are happening. And as we're willing to open more and more and more and more to that annoyance, right? And willing to change our relationship to it. So there's a relationship now of wisdom, which is, oh, there's aversion there, basically. There's some kind of aversion, some kind of rejection there. I'm willing to open and be present with it. And therefore, it's not controlling me anymore. And now there's a place of wisdom I can act from. Now, as we move on certain issues, that then can become natural, right? On other issues, it's not natural yet, and we're still working with it, and working with it for a long time, and that can change back and forth. But it's so easy for us to act from that instinctive place, which is the place of aversion or the place of grasping. So we train with, instead of being present with the aversion and the grasping, which is also the place of freedom. That is the place where, once we see it, we can actually make a decision about it. Not from that place, but from the other place inside of us, the place of freedom, which is the place from which we observe that place, right? And of course, it depends on the situation. Sometimes we don't have time to do that. That's okay, right? Like, a baby's crying, you hear your aversion, you experience your aversion, but so what? You go, you pick it up, you do what you have to do, and then maybe you investigate that afterwards. That's fine. But sometimes we actually have the opportunity to say, okay, maybe it'd be good to close the door, I'm not sure, but instead I'm just going to experiment for a little while and see what's happening. And certainly, most of all, when we sit and do the practice, all kinds of annoyances come up, which we can recognize because we're practicing, we don't have to do anything about. Right? We don't have to do anything about, like pain in my knee, or thought of how annoying that person is, or whatever it is, and we start to train with open acceptance of those moments, and therefore wise action in response to those moments, rather than rejection of them. Does that make more sense?
It's just something you have to hear over and over again and practice over, and it's so deep. But I did go somewhere a couple of months ago and felt strong aversion to the group I was with for the first minute, and I said to myself, this is not rational, something's coming up. Don't run away, just wait. And I waited and let it flow and go. After 10 minutes, it was gone. And that's very interesting, that the desire to get up and leave was quite strong in my body, but I stayed in that. So.
Beautiful. That's huge. That's huge. Like, and to notice that what allowed the aversion to pass on was actually your willingness to observe it. Your willingness to not fall into it. It's like, oh, you're like, interesting. Don't have to respond to that. Let's see what happens. Okay. It can pass on. It may not pass on, but like, you can explore it. And to just say, I mean, part of the process is, this happens in each sort of piece we work with, and also overall in our lives, is that we'll notice some experience of aversion or of grasping or of ignorance, whatever it is. And often we'll notice it much later and start to sort of explore it. And as we work with it, our noticing will get closer and closer and closer to the moment itself. Just as it arose and you noticed it. Amazing, right? Then you could deal with it much more wisely. When you could have been like caught in the aversion for an hour, ran out, or done whatever you had done, and maybe noticed it a few hours later, right? Then, oh, great, I momented it there, and then I can start to work with it there. And then we can start to even notice the beginnings of the arising of aversion, right? We can notice it before the actual aversion even arises. We notice the first inklings of it, and we can like be right with that. It's like, oh, something is just starting to trigger something interesting. I'm just going to be open to that. And doesn't even have to turn into the sort of the aggressive rejection. We can catch it at the first inkling, and there can already be a kind of openness to that moment, and then a wiser response in action. And that's just great, and we keep working with that. And as we keep working, we get sort of closer and closer to the moment until it sometimes, you know, maybe with other people this happens, but in my experience, this only happens when you're really sitting and very quiet. You can see even before the moment it arises, you know, the roots of seeing what is going to be the trigger to cause that first trigger to arise, and it can be with that moment instead, right? And just see like, oh, I can see that happening. I can see the cause of events that's happened to cause it to arise, and I can be with the very beginning stages of that cause of events.
So I'm wondering if getting to certain points in practice, or like getting like to certain openings, being able to feel into things, yeah, or whatever, if those can become a place of holding, because I feel like that's happening for me. Like it's like, oh, I got something, and maybe like my external life is changing a lot, and so like in my practice, it's like I'm maybe trying to hold on to that. If that makes sense.
Can you say a little bit more about that?
So what I want to say is that I feel like my schedule has changed tremendously. A lot of things have changed. And I feel like in the last however many months, there's been a lot of openness, like opening and growth. And it feels almost like there's a fear also to these things happen. Like it's really scary to be opening and letting go and that sort of stuff. I'm almost wondering if, like, within my practice, maybe I'm trying to, I don't know, like, if I have an idea of what my practice should be, or I'm trying to, like, look for the feelings to feel into, or try to feel into the same feelings over and over and over, like, if there's a place where it's, like, I almost wonder if, like, attachment within, inside of practice.
Yes, definitely. Definitely,
yes.
First of all, what you said was perfect, which is that you have an idea about what your practice should be.
Uh-huh.
Right? That's the first sign, and that happens to everybody, right? It's totally natural. But as like, especially after maybe you have a period where practice is going pretty well, right, quote unquote, and you feel like you're making progress, right, and like things are coming up, you're working with it, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, that's what it should be, because that was really productive, and that's right, right, exactly. So that's great. As soon as you have any sense of when you sit down, it should be a certain way, good. It's a sign to you, like, some kind of attachment, right? I have a sense of what's supposed to happen now. When, of course, the whole practice is about not controlling. That's just one, that's a kind of control, exactly what you're saying. It's like, oh, no, instead, can I just open to whatever is going to happen now rather than what should happen now? And that's exactly right. I mean, I've had the same experience where we have, particularly when we have some kind of, you know, very productive emotional experience of working with certain emotions, then we start to like seek them out. It's like, oh, I want to go there again. That must be there somewhere, right? Like, even if it's not happening now, it's like, it's got to be in there somewhere, so I'm going to be looking for it. So that's fine. And we just notice that. It's like, oh, noticing my desire to have this experience in practice again. Noticing my mind starting to search out that experience, because that was a pleasurable experience, because it was an experience of liberation, it was an experience of freedom in some way, right? Even if it was a difficult experience, right? There's an experience of release. Great. So now, can I just notice that? It's a great thing to notice. So now my object of meditation for the next moment is mind searching out that experience. But just try to notice the desire. Notice the mind searching it out. See what happens there and just open to it. And that's fine.
But like, it's like there's like this huge control stuff going on. Like, well, then what am I supposed to do? Like, if I'm not going to do that, then what?
Good. So, again, I mean, I know this is tough, but it's like, notice that, right? You're always crying out. It's like, what do I do? Good. Confusion, wanting to know what to do. Ah, confusion, wanting to know what to do. That's an interesting mind state. What's that mind state like, right? Okay, let's just explore. What is it like to feel confusion and not knowing where I am, and I want to know what to do? Totally normal, right? And then, also to remember, it's like, sometimes you get caught in that. So it's like, okay, oh, drop it all, come back to the breath, right? Doesn't have to be complex, the physical experience of the breath. Or maybe the breath isn't working for you a moment, so drop it all, be with sound. Drop it all, be with the experience of your butt on the floor or on the chair. Doesn't matter what it is, but like, come back to your anchor. Make it very simple, right? And that's great. Simple practice can be great. Doesn't have to be like there's some revelation happening or you're having something happening. It'd just be like, I'm with the breath. I'm with the breath. Fantastic, right? That's absolutely fantastic. And then your mind again will be like, but I'm supposed to be doing something else. And you'll be like, oh, notice that. Be with that for a little bit. Come back to the breath.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on how to put what you're saying into practice in situations with other people where maybe you feel like they're trying to exert control?
Yeah. First of all, it's interesting to note the experience of what does it mean that they're trying to exert control over you, right? Which may be the fact of the matter, right? They're trying to make you do something, right? It's not that unusual in our experience, right? It's true. People want you to do things a lot. Good. But first thing I notice is like, oh, when we come from a place of non-control, it's like, there's a fact out there, which is this person wants me to do this thing. That's just a fact. Just to note that, right? Because our natural reaction already is like, I'm angry at that person, I feel guilty for not doing the thing, whatever, there's a whole constellation, whatever it is for you, we can each have our different responses, right? I'm feeling ashamed, whatever we're feeling, there's a whole series of responses around that. And just to notice, like, they're doing what they're doing, but that actually doesn't necessitate anything on your part, right? All what's happening within you is actually about you, right? Like, they're making control, but the fact that you're feeling whatever you're feeling, guilty, scared, angry, etc., that's about you. Now, again, that doesn't mean, and this is the part of, so one thing we want to do, the first thing we want to do is actually just try to notice our reaction. Notice and open to our reaction as much as possible in that situation without having to respond right away, right? And in the response, right, when we're not as much caught in the anger, the guilt, whatever it is, the response can be a very clear no, right? that maybe even like, no, I'm not doing that. Or even more, because I want to make clear, like, action sentence, like, no, stop doing that. Right? Like, the person maybe is continually making demands of you. Like, we're trying to control you, whatever it is that's happening in that situation. The legitimate wise response may be like, not only no, am I not going to do that, but no, I'm asking you to stop whatever you're doing. And if you're not going to stop whatever you're doing, I'm going to leave. Right? That might be totally wise, legitimate response, which is not about controlling the situation. Right? It's not about having to have the person be a certain way. It's about recognizing, here's a fact, there's a person acting this way. Let me be with my responses to it. You know what? Being with my responses, it feels to me like this is not a wise and helpful situation. If I stay in this situation, it's going to cause me pain. It's going to be destructive. So you know what? I'm not going to stay in this situation. And now I'm going to respond in whatever ways I need to stop this situation from occurring. Maybe I can just respond to the person and say, this isn't healthy and wise, and they'll be able to hear that. Maybe I just need to leave, right? Maybe I need to leave and communicate with the person later, because then they'll be able to hear. I don't, you know, it depends on the situation what the answer is. But that's exactly the balance we've been talking about. When we stop the need for control, we can make wise action. And wise action is sometimes setting limits, saying stop, making things change. It's not that that isn't wise action. That can be very wise action. That's very important. But we do it from a place of, instead of it has to be different right now, and therefore we act with tension and anger and guilt, etc. There's a way, and this is hard, and we'll fail at it a lot, right? It's okay. Like we talk about this, the whole point is we fail, we try again, we fail, we try again. There's a way in which we can be willing to be present with our reaction, own our own reaction, and that's an important piece of it. It's saying that, acknowledging that we're actually really responsible for our own reaction. Right? Whatever the person, other person is doing, as teacher Tara Brach said the other person may be acting crazily. That may be totally true. But you're still responsible for your own reaction, right? Which isn't to say that the other person isn't being totally crazy. And you can say that, right? It's okay to acknowledge that. But still, even if that's occurring, you're still ultimately responsible for your own reaction. So how do we take responsibility for that? We do that by being willing to notice and be present with where we are. And I just want to say one other piece about that, and that means it's really hard to do that in the moment. Right? It's really hard to do that, especially in moments which trigger us. Really hard. And that means, especially as we're training with this, how do we skillfully find ways for ourselves to take a time out so that we can process that more skillfully? If it's in an actual relationship, for instance, it may be an agreement to say, like, we can say time out, which means I get to go away and not respond right now with your partner, with your parents, with whoever it is. You know what I mean? If they're the kind of person you can make that agreement with. If not, it may be like just finding a way to say, I can't respond to this right now. I'll get back to you later. Whatever that space is, because it's so hard to do, what can you do actually practically at this moment to give yourself the space that it becomes possible to do that kind of inner work? And then respond more wisely. So I have to run. It's wonderful to see you all.